Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, you're welcome back. It is Thursday night, so that means Thursday night with John Giles. He has joined us in studio. John, hello, sir.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks a million for coming in.
How about it?
Big week.
Huge week.
It's as big as a week that we could probably experience at the moment, given where we were when the group was made. And I guess overall, given the fact that we were in there against Serbia, Austria and Wales, none of them world beaters, but certainly four teams that felt they were in with a great shout of making the top two, we would have taken this.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, Dave. I think you're better having an open mind, to be honest, when you go into it, because there's no great teams out there. Now, Serbia were okay, but when we played Serbia in the first match, I think they had a lot of players missing. We went ahead after 2 minutes. The goalkeeper was terrible. And we finished up drawn 2-2 and then finished up being beaten by them. So we're only beaten by a point in the end. So we finished up well to make it. But, you know, the teams that were in it, you know, I keep saying that we're the underdogs going into it and we like to be underdogs. We don't need to be underdogs against anybody, I don't think. I think we play as well as we can play. We're not world beaters by any means, but neither are the rest of them.
Yeah, O'Neill himself has been talking this week about us being underdogs. We'll get into the Ireland-Denmark game in a moment, John, but there's a couple of things I kind of want to throw at you before we get stuck into it, because one of your ex-international teammates and a guy who followed in your footsteps as the Republic of Ireland international manager was Owen Hand, and we had him in during the week. He was chatting to Joe and to Kevin because he's written a book about his life, a memoir of Owen Hand, and told a lovely little story about you, and just have a little listen.
Okay.
Yeah, you remember 18-year-old John coming and seeing the club when you were 13 as a nice kind of image for us
all. He was about to make his debut against Sweden.
Yeah.
Noel Dwyer was with them. Yeah. He was goalkeeper of Swansea at the time. And I think I was the only player, youngster, there, down in Richmond, Stella Maris ground. And I think I must have mitched off school because I heard they were there. I had to because I was the only one there. And it was kind of John Giles, he's about to make his debut.
Yeah.
He was Manchester United. And, of course, they involved me in a little kickabout. Oh, my God, did that give me a...
What do you mean they involved you in a kickabout?
They were doing a little bit of warm-up training and John was shooting in at Noel, you know, doing a little bit of... And I came and said, can I join? Yeah. And they said, yeah. And it was, they gave me a kickabout and I was shooting in at Noel and whatever, you know.
Was this the day of the game or...?
No. This is about, I think, about 2 days before, you know.
Debut, right.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, it was just, again, we're talking about memorable moments, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, John Giles, my God, you know, Manchester United, wow. And, of course, he scored a brilliant goal for Ireland against Sweden and Ireland won.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I came from Stella originally. I played my last year in playing schoolboy football, played for Stella Maris before I went to Manchester United. So, and Eamon played for Stella Maris as well, obviously younger than me, and Owen was younger again. So Owen had a few years at Stella. So I didn't know who Owen was at that time.
But you remember that little kickabout,
It was down in Richmond Road there, down in Stella's pitch. I think they asked us to go down, because Noel Dwyer was an ex-Stella player as well, to go down and just say hello to everybody, the kids around the ground. I don't remember it being Owen.
Right.
You know,
but you remember the kid.
I remember the kid, He's still a kid.
And obviously great memories for you, because that's an incredibly special time in your life. I mean, is 2 days out from where it all started.
Yeah, well, what happened was I only played 2 matches for Manchester United at that time when I was picked for the Irish team. It was, the selection committee was picking the team. But it was a big game. Well, I mean, your first match is always a big game. It was one of my most memorable moments, because as a kid I went to Dalyman Park with my father, Tommy Egerton, Peter Farrell, Con Martin, Jackie Carey, all these great players. You wanted to play in Dalyman in the Irish team, and I was picked sort of prematurely. I was just short of 19 and I only played 2 matches for Manchester United. But we were actually in Dublin on the Monday. We were playing a home farm team with the U team on the Monday, and I was due to go back to Manchester. And what happened was we were fogged in, and Jimmy Murphy, who was in charge of it, said, look, you might as well stay here and do it. That's where I'd be doing a bit of training at Stella at that particular time. I didn't go back to Manchester to come back again because I was in the reserves. If you were playing the first team, you had to play and then make your way over and play on the Sunday, which most of the rest of the lads did. But it was great because I was going into Gresham Hotel. We used to meet in the Gresham Hotel at 11 o'clock. And I'd only met two of the players before. Joe Carlin was another Irish lad, Dublin lad, playing his first match. It was Noel Dwyer's first match. But we had Charlie Hurley and Noel Cantwell, Pat Sayward, Georgie Cummins. Like, these were idols of mine. Mm-hmm. I'd only watched them 3 years before I went to England. And it was one of the best times you could have. I remember walking down O'Connell Street and ready to meet these lads. You know, these were my heroes. And we were 2-0 down against Sweden, who were a good team. They'd played in the final of the World Cup the previous year in Sweden. Brazil beat them in 1958. And they'd beaten England at Wembley on the Wednesday. And we were playing at Daly Mount, obviously, and we went 2-0 down. It looked like we were going to get a hiding. And I was lucky enough. I scored a very, very good goal to make it 2-1, and we went on to win 3-2. So it was one of the big, well, it was certainly a big day for me, but it was one of the big days. Daly Mount was packed, you know. It was people on the roofs and that. But
yeah, when Daly Mount was packed, you really mean it was packed.
Yeah, you just get the Daly Mount roar. Because the crowd, as you can remember, were on top of you there, yeah, and that, you know. See, it was big, always big. Like, I know when the game became more popular later on, but there was a huge interest in soccer. This was in 1959. Place was packed out, especially for the big matches, international and Daly Mount, and you got the Daly Mount roar. So it was a good day.
There's a couple of parallels with this week. Firstly, the Scandinavian opposition, and secondly, the fact that in the build-up to the game, you were kept in Dublin due to the fog and you couldn't head back to Manchester, because the first time you played against Denmark in your career, the match was abandoned because the fog became so heavy that you couldn't see where you were going. Yeah. And it was obviously against another Scandinavian side in Denmark. You played them four times, I think, in your career, all competitive games.
Yeah.
Mixed memories.
Yeah. Well, the old days weren't great. I mean, we had a selection committee of five that was picking the team, and they were hopeless. We never had any continuity in the team. We lost a lot of matches. Then McMeegan took over, Liam Toohey took over, then I took over. And we played when I was player manager in 1978. And actually, the match we played in Denmark was the first time they had all their star players that played abroad back for the game. It was 3-3 draw. We were winning 3-1. We drew 3-3, but I think we beat them 2-0 in Dublin later on in that particular group. But you know, they always produce good players. Danish. I mean, they went on to win. They didn't win the Euros one year
in '92. Yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't qualify. I think they got in on a somebody.
Yeah, the breakup of the former Yugoslavia saw them get in.
Let them in, and they went on to win it with Schmeichel and all. They were really, really top class players. So hopefully this lot won't be as good as that.
And you would have been working with RT in the World Cup. Excuse me, coverage of 1980 Mexico '86. Brilliant team as well. Søren Lerby,
some
and
great players.
Michael Laudrup and those guys. Yeah, they were always technically gifted. Do you consider them to be the same now?
I wouldn't think they're as gifted. I don't think they have the players now as they had then, Dave. I mean, we talk about Eriksen. Eriksen is by far, now he gets all the publicity, by far the best player. And I don't think Eriksen would be as good as some of the lads that played in like the 70s and the 80s for Denmark.
Yeah, there's a lot of publicity, as you say, a lot of media focus on him this week. Yeah. And he's saying, look, we're not a one-man team. Just by shutting me down and paying me a little too much attention, that'll just make space for everybody else.
Yeah, I just got the feeling with him. I don't think he'd like the pressure, Eriksen. I see him, you know, playing a lot for Spurs, and he can be he's a very, very gifted lad. But I never think he really gets a grip of the game in the way that you would expect him to. I don't think he takes on that responsibility. So I don't think he'd like this pressure on him going into the match.
Too much of the focus on him.
Yeah, I think so. Because when you watch him play, he drifts in and drifts out. He's very, very talented, and of course you'd have to respect him, but he drifts out of the game for long, long periods of the game. And there's times I watch Spurs and think, I'd be a lot of times disappointed in him with the ability that he has.
So that's even in games where Spurs would have a lot of the ball, you mean?
Yeah, even any of the games. Like he scores spectacular goals, but he doesn't actually play in a midfield role. He's a bit advanced to the midfield, and he comes in, he goes out. Very gifted when he's on the ball. But in my opinion, doesn't get on the ball as much as he could or should. I mean, if we were playing Croatia now, I'd be a bit worried about Modric, who is a real, real midfield player and can control the game. I would doubt if Denmark have anybody like that in their team.
So I wonder, should the Danes play him a little bit deeper and put him in the same place that Joe Allen played before he was taken out of it against us in Cardiff? Because things changed once he went.
I'm not so sure he'd want to do it. You know, I don't know the character. I don't know his character. But looking at him playing, I think he's happy enough doing what he's doing. I don't see him being the type of say, well, I'll take the responsibility for that. I mean, he's spectacular, his goals, he's very, very good, very talented lad. But I wouldn't be so sure that he'd want to do and take the responsibility that he could do.
It's So do we need to be as worried about him as we might have been about Bale when Wales came to Dublin, for example?
Well, Bale would be more spectacular. I think Bale would do it more on his own as an individual player rather than Eriksen doing it. Well, don't get me wrong. He's not a bad player. He's a very, very good player. You'd have to respect him. But I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't put too much emphasis on him. I think it's good for us that there's a lot of emphasis and pressure on him. And we'll see how he can handle that.
Defensively, over the two legs, we're obviously going to have to be excellent. I think we only scored 12 goals in the 10 qualifiers. Five of those were against Moldova. So that leaves you with 7 goals from the other 8 games. So we're certainly not prolific.
No.
And we're probably not going to score 3 or 4 goals over the two legs. So we just need to see more of what we saw in Cardiff, would you say?
Well, you have to defend well anyway, Dave, no matter who you're playing, what you're playing. I mean, to be honest, I'd rather see us not score so many goals and not lose goals rather than score a lot and lose a lot. I think there's much more consistency when you don't concede goals easily. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, you can organise defence. You can't teach people how to score goals. And we don't have a recognised goal scorer, really. I mean, Robbie Keane was the last one we had. Mm. Shane Long hasn't really scored. He hasn't scored much this season. Murphy's come in as well. Walters is injured. So, like, we don't have a prolific goal scorer anyway. So, therefore, we can't afford to give goals away. And we haven't done.
It might be the one chance, just like Cardiff.
If you're defending well, you only need one. Mm. You know, like we watch Liverpool, say, for example, week in and week out, and they score a lot of goals and lose a lot of goals. No consistency about it. You know, all the top teams are very, very tight. Don't give them, like Chelsea winning the league last year, Mourinho when he was at Chelsea. Chelsea last year, sorry, with Conte and with Mourinho over the years. It's the first thing you do, I think a good coach does, is stop conceding a lot of goals.
We're going to have Harry Arter and hopefully Jeff Hendrick, who's fit in our midfield. No David Myler, though, because he's suspended for this game. So there will be at least one change in midfield. Now, whether that's Wes or whether it's Glenn Whelan, it remains to be seen. But do you accept, and you're always hoping, wishing, encouraging this Irish team to spend more time with the ball and not be afraid maybe of having the ball. Do you accept that over the two legs, we are going to spend the vast majority of the games without the ball?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect anything different. I don't think Wes will play in Denmark particularly. No, I'd say much of the same, really. I can't see much of it changing. I think when we went to Wales, a lot of things are psychological in football, as we know. We had to win in Wales. Our best performance is when we had to win. Now, we're going to Denmark. We don't have to win in Denmark. So I would anticipate a fairly defensive performance. Although, you know, some of the matches we did play, I think did we score as many goals away from home in this?
Yeah, well, we obviously got the the one in Wales, we got the one in Austria, we got 3 away to Moldova, 1 in Georgia, and the 2 in Serbia. So we scored in every game that we travelled.
Did we get more than 1 in Austria?
Just the 1.
Did we? I thought we won more than that in Austria.
Just that McLean
goal. We scored as many goals away from home as we have at home.
Yeah.
So again, you see, I think a lot of it's a bit of a myth, you know, the home and away basis. Because if you look back on the actual group stages itself, you know, we probably got more points away from home than we did
at home.
There's
no question our best performances were away from the Aviva Stadium.
But when we go into the matches, most of them, you say, well, if we get a point here, we'll be doing well, you know, and we win at home. It doesn't always work. It hasn't worked that way, you know. So I'd say if it's there for the taking on Saturday away from home, let's take it, you know. Because, see, I think when we have the players at home, sometimes there's more pressure on playing at home because you're expected to get on the ball and dominate the game. And when that doesn't happen, the crowd gets impatient and you actually get on to the home team, you know. Whereas away from home, the home crowd don't want you to have the ball. So it's a different type of game altogether. There's more pressure. I think there's more pressure sometimes when you're playing at home, which proved to be the case actually in the matches in the qualifiers.
And particularly when you're playing for the international team, there seems to be a fear at times in some of these players that for Ireland that manifests itself at the Aviva Stadium, doesn't away from home and doesn't when they're playing for their clubs.
Yeah, well, it's everything is different when you play. If you're playing for your country, you're playing for a different club, there's different approaches to it. But certainly, you know, if you look back on the results and you would say, before you started, for example, Serbia, or a point to be great in Serbia. Actually, Serbia didn't play all that well. We went ahead after
a few minutes.
2 minutes.
Scored too early, John.
We'll have to stop that. It's a bad habit, that. So it's a state of mind gone into it. But my attitude would be, look, against Denmark even, take the game on its merits. If it's there for the taking, let's take it. If we have to defend for 90 minutes, then we have to defend for 90 minutes. But hopefully we'll come. Denmark have finished second, the same as us. I mean, if they were that good, most it seems, then they would have won the group, and they didn't. But it's all to play for. It's all on paper. The draw was good, I think. It was the best draw we could have had on paper. Now we have to go and do our stuff.
Would you bring Glenn Whelan in to replace David Myler, or is that a bit too negative?
I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. I mean, I think Arthur could be in the team. McLean, as we know.
Brady.
And Hendrick.
So that's they'd be the four you would like to see playing?
Yeah.
There's always the temptation, though, to go back to Glenn, isn't there?
Well, there's this thing in the game, generally, I think, it's become part of the game now that you have to have a holding midfield player, a designated holding midfield.
Not a term you're a fan of?
No, I don't like it. I mean, if why can't you be a midfield player, right? Get on the ball as much as, in other words, if you get on the ball a lot, then you don't have to defend as much. I mean, I'll tell you who's a great example. You get Kante playing for Chelsea, right? He gets more tackles in than anybody else, but he's not a designated holding midfield player. He can get on the ball, he can pass and do it. It doesn't stop him from getting his tackles in either. I don't think you need a designated holding midfield player. I hear a lot of this in the game. Oh, it frees the other players to go forward. Now, if you break that, then what does that mean? Where's the ball? You go forward at the right time, Dave. You get back at the right time. No, it doesn't free anybody. I mean, if the left side midfield player, for example, if it's on to go, then he goes. If it's not on to go, then he doesn't go. So it doesn't actually affect the holding midfield player. It shouldn't affect what the right side of midfield player. And it doesn't help them attack. You attack at the right time. Everything is in relation to where's the ball. You know, the left side midfield can get forward and the ball, he shouldn't be getting forward. So I don't think, I think midfield players are midfield players. You get up and down together. Actually, I think the Irish team, when Whelan wasn't in the team, and McCarthy, we've played better, if you look at the results.
A lot of people would feel that way. Before I move on, I get the impression that you're positive enough on our chances. You've no crystal ball in your hand at the moment, but if you were to kind of try and predict how it might go, would you be happy enough that we've got like a 50-50 chance at worst of getting out of this tie?
At worst, I think if we play as well as we can play, and that's always about whatever team, you have to play as well as you can play. I think we're capable of doing it. Because Denmark, they can't be any great team if they finish second in the group. But I don't think there's any great teams out there, Dave. I mean, you go back to the Euros last year, you got Iceland getting into the semi-finals. Wales got in and go out of the finals. We come out of the group. You know, these were all supposed to be smaller countries and Wales did well. So there's no great teams out there. And I would doubt very much if Denmark were a great team. We're not a great team, but we can only be as good as we can be on the day. And my take on it is if we play as well as we can, I think we're capable of winning. And that's all you can start with. Nobody can say, well, we're going to win 2-0 or 3-0. Nobody can see that. That's impossible. But we can't. I do know that we went to Wales when we had to win. We won. Wales was supposed to be... And before the group started, if somebody said, look, you're going to win in Wales, I said, well, I wouldn't be too sure about that. You know, point would be great there. We needed to win it. And the Plats did very well, seemed it very well, and went on and won it. So it's an attitude of mind. All you can go into any match is, are we capable of winning it? Do we have to play well? If you don't play well, and you don't deserve to do it. So it's all about how you're playing. The draw was great. I think it was a good draw. We always wanted the draw. That's on paper. Now we've got to go and do our stuff. And I think we're capable of doing it. Now we have to wait and see how we play.
I like the positivity. We're going to move on to a couple of other stories with John in a moment.
Off the ball. On Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Okay, John Giles with us on this Thursday evening here on Off the Ball. John, we've kind of discussed the international situation, and no doubt when we chat to you next Thursday, we're either going to be in Russia or we're not. Yeah. So there'll be a lot to talk about next Thursday
as
well.
Russia with love, yeah.
Exactly. The Premier League, it's always interesting, but as a Premier League commentator on Off the Ball, myself and Nathan are a little fearful that we're already in a position where we're close to writing off the Premier League title race. How impressive have Manchester City been? They've only dropped a couple of points and they just seem to be going from strength to strength. Would you have a similar fear?
Well, it's early days. I'd always be very cautious, Dave. You know, we've seen teams before, not very many, remember Manchester United doing it with Newcastle years ago? I think Newcastle were at 9, 10, 11 points.
15.
In front, 15 points in front in on the pit. So anything can happen. Now, at the moment, you wouldn't get it. You wouldn't bet against Manchester City doing it because they're playing extremely well. But it's early days and it can be fragile. I would certainly definitely make them favourites like everybody else because the other teams are not really competing with them.
That's the worry, isn't it? They seem to be a good deal ahead of the rest.
Exactly. Well, look at Manchester United, for example. I mean, most people thought will be between Manchester United and Manchester City. And it still looks that way. But Manchester United not doing their stuff. And then they've had two examinations there. One at Anfield, I thought they lost that. They failed badly in that examination. And certainly at Chelsea, I thought Chelsea were by far the better team last week. So I'd say it's a worry for Mourinho. Actually, he looks a bit worried to me. He doesn't look right. The sounds about Paris Saint-Germain from different sources. You wouldn't know what's going on. But he doesn't look a happy camper. I think he sees City doing what they're doing and United not doing what they should be doing.
We had that game live and off the ball last Sunday. Kenny Cunningham was in Cocom with me and he put a lot of it on the absence of Paul Pogba. And this is a player that didn't certainly light up the Premier League season in the last campaign, and maybe he's becoming a better player with every week that he's not there.
Exactly. That happens
in
football.
Yeah.
When the longer I was at Leeds for a few years, wasn't playing particularly well, I was getting the right stick from the, not lost, a bit of stick from the crowd, a bit of criticism. And I got an injury. I was out for 6 weeks with a hamstring injury. And I became a better and better player by the time, I was a great player by the time the 6 weeks were up. Now, I wouldn't agree with Kenny on that. I mean, where is the evidence of Pogba doing what he's supposed to, what he's being missed for? He didn't play well last year. I don't think influences a game as much as he should. I don't think he's any real positional sense. He's very good on the ball. He can score spectacular goals. He can score spectacular passes. But he's never going to direct a game.
Mm. And well, I think it was that there, spark that Kenny felt they were lacking because it was a midfield of Herrera.
But it's more than a spark, Dave. You see, I don't think it's a spark. It's genuine play. I don't think Herrera is good enough. Matic is brilliant. I thought he was very, very good last week. He's the only one in there, right? He is a real midfield player. I've never seen Pogba as the midfield player. He scores spectacular goals. He'll do certain things, but I don't think he's the one that's responsible. His absence is responsible for Manchester United playing the way they're playing.
I guess we'll find out, won't we? If things do change when he's
spectacular,
fit.
He's spectacular, Pogba. But look at Pogba all last year. He didn't really do it. This season, he scores a few goals. And he's a talented guy. But if you talk about, there's very few people talk actual positional sense. I don't think Pogba has any positional sense. When the ball comes to him, he does his stuff, but he doesn't make the ball come to him. That's my take on it. I think a lot, and it's going to be said, Pogba's not there, he's missed for doing. I don't believe that. I wouldn't agree with Kenny on that. I mean, that's Kenny's opinion, that's fair enough, but I wouldn't agree with that.
Since Mourinho has come in, they've spent over 300 million.
Yeah.
And yet, when they need a goal, when they're chasing the game, the last 20 minutes last Sunday are just get the ball down and pump it forward tomorrow, Fellaini. Yeah. And you're watching the most limited, lacking in ideas, lacking creativity football team that anywhere in the Premier League, given the riches and the money that they spent. It was quite flabbergasting to watch that last 20-25 minutes last Sunday.
The first time he's done it. You know, this is the contradiction in Mourinho. He's done that a lot when they've gone behind. Now, this is the complete opposite of what Ferguson used to do. What Ferguson was great at, and they called it, you know, the Fergie time, because he encouraged the players to keep doing what was the right thing to do regardless of what stage of the match is, and that was going into overtime. And it takes a bit of nerve to do it. It's easy to put somebody on like Fellaini and knock it up there. And it has worked at times for him, but I don't think it's a good thing generally. But, you know, like, Mourinho's been a great coach. He's won an awful lot of things. But I think his approach at Liverpool, I think, was totally wrong, what he did. He won against Spurs. Mm. But I thought Chelsea were by far the better team. Herrera, I don't think, is going to do it for him. Mkhitaryan, I don't think he's going to really do it for him. Lukaku needs people doing a lot for him before he gets into his bed. And it's not there. Now, I don't think Pogba is going to make that much difference when he comes back. And Matt is not in the team, you see. Matt is a creative player. And surprisingly, he's not.
He's talk of him heading away from the club in January as well, like one of the most creative players they have at the club, yeah, and one that actually does do it for them.
It does, yeah. I can't understand that. I mean, he scores goals, he gets a few goals, he gets on the ball. I think he's far better than Herrera. Matic has been very, very good for them. But all round, I don't think they have it all round, Manchester United. And that's why City is a huge contrast to them. Now, what we're talking about now at City, are they going to maintain that? I think they will, but it's very, very, very early days yet. There's a long, long way to go yet. But I can't see anybody at the moment challenging them in the way that they should be challenging them.
Did you start to doubt Guardiola from the time that he left Bayern Munich without winning a Champions League, without getting to a Champions League final, and then coming towards the end of his first season at Manchester City? Because there were some that said, well, look, he doesn't have the players that he had at Barcelona. He doesn't have the Messis, Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, all these like world player, world great players. And now we're seeing maybe some limitations in Guardiola as a manager, but well, he's now turning it around.
Well, it's always a test, you know. But it was his first year. Now, I thought you needed two windows to get the players. See, you can't do what you want to do without having the players in that you want in the club. Now, I think last year, I criticised him last year. I never lost faith in him. I did criticise him last year because I think there was too much emphasis on playing out from the back from the goalkeeper. That was troublesome. Trouble. It wasn't right. At times he played the two fullbacks coming into midfield. I didn't agree with that either. So I criticised him for that. But I always felt he needed the time. You need 6 months, 7 months. You have to get the players in that you want. And I tipped Manchester City at the start of the season to win it because I think he was the only manager that had the full say in getting the players in they wanted. I don't think Mourinho had, for example. I'm not sure Mourinho really wanted Pogba last year at the price that he paid. They paid for him. But he had to go along with it because he was backing the CEO. This year, he actually said publicly, I got 4 out of the 5 players that I wanted. Right? Now, why didn't he get the 5 players? They're not short of money. Players want to come to Manchester United. So I feel there's some restriction there of who he can get and who he can get. And I think Guardiola, I think Klopp is the same at Liverpool. Spurs don't want to spend much money anyway. So I think Guardiola was the only one that could say to the club, I want Joe Bloggs, and got them. If he wanted 5 or 6, I think he got exactly what he wanted, which gives him obviously a head start on the rest. Because 90% of the management, Dave, is getting the players in that you want and getting rid of the players that you don't want. It's 90% of the job. Because every manager has a vision of how they want a team to play. And the only way to fulfil that vision, if that's the right word, is to get the players in you want. This is why you see Conte's in trouble at Chelsea, for example. He didn't want Matic to go. He said publicly he didn't want Matic to go. Somebody else made the decision that he was going, which means he's not in charge of the situation.
Another key to manager is improving the players as footballers that you have.
Exactly.
And when you look at guys like John Stones, Raheem Sterling, Fernandinho, it's clear that spending a year working under Pep Guardiola is having a massive impact.
Totally. And getting in the new players. They were the players that were there. But then, when he first came in, I don't think he bought a player. He might have bought a goalkeeper or something. But he's had two windows now. Now, after a year with the two windows, the manager should have almost all the players he wants there. If there's nobody stopping him from getting them. And that's what I believe happened to him. There was no intrusion on the guy. He said, okay, do you want Joe Bloggs? We got him. Now you can judge the managers. There's an awful lot of managers sacked, Dave. Where he said, I think it happened now, say Bilic is sacked, as you know. Now they spent a good bit of money in the summer. I don't think Bilic spent that money. Right? And he was walking. What they said at West Ham, I'm going to change this a little bit. West Ham was that they were going to keep him for the year, but they weren't going to keep him. That was signing a death warrant.
Yeah, it was inevitable.
Because players, I know players, want to believe the manager's there forever. They're playing for that manager because their contracts are up and everything. Now, once the players know, it's like Fergus. Remember Fergus years ago said he was going to resign? Manchester United were gone. It happens, right? So I don't think Bilic got what he wanted and then he was told he's not going to be kept on. That's deadly. Guardiola, I think, was the only one of the top managers because Coutinho was going to talk about him going to Barcelona, for example. Klopp actually said at the end, it's not up to me. I want to keep him, but if the directors feel that they have to sell him, then they have to sell him. So he wasn't in charge of it. That was a difficult one. I think Guardiola, again, I'd repeat, is the only one that got the players in they wanted. I'm not so sure Mourinho did, whether it be Pogba or anything.
Well, they still look to be three or four players short of where they need to be.
And they spent a lot of money. You said it early on, they spent a lot of money. Mm. Now, he's had two windows the same as Guardiola, but I don't think that much better than they were last year.
No, they're in the same boat, but they're not in the same boat.
Yeah, so City are better. Now, whether it lasts or not, Dave, nobody knows. If I was putting money on it to last, I'd put money on it to last.
Brilliant stuff. John, thanks so much.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll speak to you next Thursday when we'll know where we stand in the world of football. That's all that time we have with John this evening. But don't worry, you can hear the full chat with John Giles on podcast or listen back at offtheball.com. Tomorrow night, Brian O'Driscoll is in studio. Keep your questions coming in for Brian. Tweet us using the hashtag AskBod. Tom Dunn is up next. Good night.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.